The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
This podcast has been sponsored by Juniper Square. Juniper Square is transforming the private capital markets industry with solutions and services that streamline fundraising, investment operations, and investor reporting. Designed for commercial real estate, Juniper Square is trusted by hundreds of investment sponsors to manage more than $1 trillion in real estate investments. Reach Juniper Square at junipersquare.com.
Welcome to the program. My guests are Debo Ayeni, who is with Alex Brown Realty, and Mac McComas, who is with John Hopkins University. And, you know, John Hopkins does a lot more than just count the number of COVID cases and make biomedical breakthroughs. They also have an urban planning type of program. They follow real estate. They follow cities and urban planning. And these two guys did something really interesting, something we would probably all like to do. They went to Nashville, listened to a bunch of country music, drank a bunch of beer, crashed bachelorette parties, and came away and figured out this is why Nashville is the hottest city in the United States. This is why everybody is trying to figure out what Nashville has done. Now, I jest about the beer drinking and the crashing of the bachelorette parties, but aren't these all the things we think about with Nashville? There's country singers. There's the bachelorette parties. They show up in Vegas. They show up in Nashville. The beer drinking, well, there's beer everywhere. But these two fellas did the research as to why Nashville has accomplished what it's accomplished, and then further tried to figure out, is this replicable? Can cities across the United States that have the proper resources, something akin to maybe Nashville? I mean, there's only two music cities in the world, right? It's Nashville and Memphis, and they argue about who is the real music city. Memphis says they're the original music city. But Nashville is more often mentioned, let's face it. It's a bigger city. It's hot. Gentlemen, welcome to the program, and I hope you've sobered up since all that research has been conducted.
Well, thank you, Mike. Thank you for having us. Yeah, it was quite an experience. Nashville is certainly a fun city.
Did you guys actually go there? Or, I mean, were you on site there doing research? Or I know in this day and age of big data and wireless technology, we can research things without even being there. So did you actually spend time in Nashville?
I did not as part of this research effort. I'm not sure if Mac has gone down there or not.
No. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to make a trip down, but certainly plan on doing it in the near future.
So everybody erase everything I said about their behavior over there in Nashville with the drinking and the country music. They did it remotely. You probably had a beer while you were doing the research remotely and listening to some country music. Tell us about Nashville. Give us the lowdown on why. What is it that Nashville has got? And it's not by no means the only buzz city in America. And I think that this is one of the things I want to get at with you guys is that, you know, when you look at Austin and you look at, you know, name the cities, you look at Boise and you go right down the line of these hot cities. What is it about Nashville that maybe a standout even within that group? But let's start with why Nashville is so potent as a city that attracts young people, jobs, population, and so on. What's going on there?
Well, what was really interesting to me in this project is the fact that Nashville has a really young and educated workforce, and it has a very diversified economy. So for this series, we looked at five specific factors. We looked at Nashville's governance. We looked at its proximity to other metro areas. We looked at how diverse its economy was. We looked at its consumption offerings and the quality of life it offers its residents. And we also looked at whether or not it's a draw for young and educated people.
Okay, let me stop you there just one second. The one thing that I don't hear about Nashville that seems to be a key component to a lot of these emerging markets is a John Hopkins University or a Stanford or a University of Texas. That's not really a college city, is it? And it doesn't have any big name university there that I know of that turns out biomedical people and tech people and so on?
You'd be surprised. Nashville actually has about 30 colleges and universities in the in its metropolitan area, so it is a draw for high school students from the southern region and from other parts of the country as well, for higher education. Vanderbilt University, it's probably the most well known university down there, but there are a few others as well, and Mac may have a little more detail he'd like to provide here. But yeah, in terms of how many colleges and universities there are in the area, there are roughly 30. So there are quite a few high school students that do look to the Nashville region when they're deciding where to go to college.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think Dave was definitely right there that you know, when people think of, you know, what colleges and universities exist in Nashville, Vanderbilt comes to mind, but you know, there are many smaller ones that are regional pulls from, you know, neighboring states and kind of the Nashville metro area as well. And I think that's one of the advantages, is that because a lot of the people that are going to higher education, institutions of higher education in the city are regional, that might increase the chance that they want to stick around in the city after they graduate, because it's a place where, you know, they might be closer to family and friends than, you know, say somebody who grows up in California and goes to MIT. So I think that's something that it certainly has going for it.
Yeah, and it's a fun city. There's no question about that. So it's certainly a reason for young people to stick around. So what about those five factors again? You were talking about the five factors. So how did and you rated Nashville vis-a-vis how many other cities?
So it depended on what we were looking at, but we were trying to compare Nashville to its peers. So look at either similarly large counties. So we were looking at Davidson County, the county that Nashville is located in, or the Nashville metropolitan area, because when we're thinking about job and population growth, a lot of that happens in kind of a larger context than what you think of as, you know, kind of Nashville city proper. Mm-hmm. So we generally looked at anywhere from 100 to 150 other large metropolitan areas or large counties.
Okay, so Nashville came out, did you actually do a ranking and Nashville was number one? Is that kind of how it worked out?
So we looked across a couple indicators, and the two primary ones we were concerned about were job growth and employment growth. And while Nashville wasn't at the very top, Nashville was generally among kind of the top 10 amongst both of those indicators.
Now, you guys produced a report, correct, on this topic?
We have. We're producing, as the series goes along, we're producing a report on each topic. So to date, we've produced three. The first report was kind of an introduction to the series. And then we've also produced a report on Nashville's economy and how diverse it is, and the quality of life factors that attract people to Nashville as well.
Now, will you do a consolidated report as well once you're done with that?
That is a good question. It's not something we've talked about. We'll certainly do kind of a wrap-up. At least if we don't do that in the final report, we may do a consolidated report after we've covered that final factor. But at the very least, we'll do some kind of wrap-up or primary takeaway report or section to that final piece.
Now, let's get back to what Nashville does so right. I mean, if you were to summarize it, why is Nashville the powerhouse city that we see today with so much growth going on and really just so much attention from young people in the business community and investment community and so on?
Well, we talked about having a young and educated workforce, and to me, that's certainly one of the advantages that Nashville has. It is a draw for many young people because of the number of colleges and universities in the area. Many of them stay in the area because of all the different activities and recreational events and options that are down there, and because of the number of jobs that are down there, and because there's also a relatively low cost of living in Nashville. So young people come down to the area, to Nashville, and then they tend to stay in the area, and it kind of builds upon itself. Firms that are looking to hire a college-educated workforce gravitate to Nashville for that reason. And then also some of these graduates will start businesses of their own, and that'll also contribute to employment growth. And then in addition to that advantage, Nashville also has a pretty diverse economy. Its economy isn't concentrated excessively in any particular sector. And this is extremely important. We all know what's happened to some of the cities in the Rust Belt that are concentrated in manufacturing and what's happened to them as manufacturing has become less expensive in other areas of the country and the world. Nashville doesn't have that issue because its economy is pretty diverse. It's spread amongst a number of different industries. We looked at what's called the Hockman Index, which is used to rank a city's job sector diversity. And in 2000, Nashville scored, I believe it ranked number 3 in the Hockman Index, just behind New York and Chicago. And since 2000, its growth has exploded. So having a diverse economy has not only protected it against economic shocks that happen when a particular industry is affected by something, for example, manufacturing, as I mentioned earlier, but in addition to protecting it against negative economic shocks, it's also help the employment base and helped employment growth in the area. Matt can speak.
I think Matt can speak to what? What were you going to say there?
I was just going to say the Hockman Index is kind of technical. So I didn't want to
We don't want to get too technical, but I understand what the way. In fact, I only learned about it a few weeks ago and had written a story with the Hockman Index in there. But it has to do with measuring the diversification, the economic diversity of a city. We got that. But let me ask you this. This is, I think, what people are wondering, and I'm wondering. How did Nashville get in the position? We see that it's very successful now, but how did it become that? Because years ago, people weren't talking about Nashville like they are today. I mean, it was just a place where you went to listen to music and have a good time, but it's gone well beyond that. So And this kind of starts leading us down the path of how does another city replicate it? There's certain advantages, clearly, that Nashville has that others don't. They're in a low-tax state. I don't even know how big a factor low taxes are. But you also have the big entertainment industry there musically. Not just musically, but it's an entertainment industry. So what did Nashville do anything consciously? Did city leaders do something consciously to make their city what it is today, or was this happenstance?
Yeah, so I'll say that there were a couple of things that city leaders and city residents did consciously, and then something that maybe was a little bit less conscious, but I think equally, if not more important. And the first one is... back in the 50s and 60s, as Nashville, the city, and Nashville, its suburbs, and Davidson County were growing, the voters in those areas decided to consolidate the government of the city of Nashville and Davidson County into one metropolitan government. And this was done for reasons of, expanding water and sewer and safety services into the suburbs. So kind of, what might seem like mundane things, but, this ability to tie the city government into its suburbs, we think helped lay some of the groundwork for, what we see is relatively high quality of life. And I think, that kind of good provision of basic city services to residents.
Interesting. So this was an annexation play. Then they annexed surrounding areas and gave themselves a kind of scale that was necessary to accomplish some of these things.
Exactly. And you see, today there are examples of places that struggle because they don't have that kind of advantage of scale. If you look at a place like my home of Baltimore City, it's separate from its suburbs in Baltimore County, and this really restricts and makes coordination with its suburbs quite difficult. You see the same thing in St. Louis as well. But the other thing that I think you know, that certainly happened. And I think that Nashville was more lucky about this than anything else, was what you've been speaking to is Nashville is a really great place for, you know, going out to eat, going out to bars, listening to music, being entertained. You know, when we thought of what city's primary function was in the kind of middle of the 20th century and before then, cities were places of production. So they were places where factories were located. You know, inner harbors were you know, cluttered with factories, and they were known for being ports. But as kind of manufacturing declined in the U.S. more generally, what you've seen in the past couple of decades is cities become more places of consumption, where people, you know, they visit, they want to live because of high quality of life in terms of great theater, in terms of great concerts, in terms of great bars. And, you know, this was something that Nashville kind of always had going for it. But I think its ability to really capitalize that on that, and do that better than a lot of other cities that kind of struggled to make that transition, certainly has helped it in recent decades.
Interesting. So the reports that you've written so far, if people want to take a look at those reports, where can they access them?
They can access them on Alex Braun Realty's website. That's at www.abrealty.com. And if they're a member of LinkedIn, they can also access them on Alex Braun Realty's LinkedIn page. And then they can also access them through Johns Hopkins channels as well.
So let's talk about how cities can look at Nashville, read your reports, learn what Nashville did, and then how replicable is this, I guess, is my bottom line question. How replicable is it? And if it is replicable, which I'm sure it is in some cases, but you'd have to have something going for you. So maybe you even identify some cities, or at least a scenario, a city with this, that, and the other thing would have the opportunity to do what Nashville has done, perhaps. It's all about execution, of course. Let's say a team just decides, I want to study Nashville, and we want to be like Nashville. What are the chances?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's hard to make broad sweeping changes for any city and to pivot. But I think, you know, what if you look at Nashville and you want to get some lessons about what's gone well for the city is that, you know, it's when you think of Nashville, you think of, again, you think of its unique qualities. So I think what other cities should do is think about, you know, their comparative advantage. So, you know, what makes Denver, Denver? What makes Austin, you know, unique and Austin? And really try to capitalize on that because, you know, while not everybody is going to want to live in, say, Charlotte or Denver, there will be unique attributes to those places that will attract certain types of people. And there will be reasons that people want to move there because they moved to Denver because they love skiing. Well, you know, Denver should embrace that. They shouldn't try to be New York City or San Francisco, even though New York City and San Francisco have been wildly successful. So I think kind of determining what your comparative advantage is and really recognizing the importance of quality of life. But again, you know, you look at somewhere like New York City and San Francisco, those are extremely expensive cities to live in, yet people want to live there because quality of life is high. So, you know, if you're a more of a low-cost city like Nashville, you can kind of balance some of those attributes.
Here's the thing is, you know, Nashville, I would imagine, is seeing a lot of price escalation because of the demand. People are moving in. And now all of a sudden that inexpensive, fun city is getting to be more expensive. The housing is going up. And when real estate values go up, they have to start charging more for the carton of milk and the six pack of beer and so on. So is that happening in Nashville now? I know home prices are going up, but do they still have a long runway to go before they run into those kind of problems?
Yeah, I think you're definitely right that they're starting to come up against some of those challenges of increasing rent and real estate prices. you know, they're still relatively affordable if, you know, you compare Nashville to, again, you know, Boston, Seattle, San Francisco, New York City. It's still relatively affordable. But again, this is something that cities should be aware of, is that, you know, when they do, if they are lucky enough to attract people and jobs, they should be aware of the pressures that will put on legacy residents, and they'll need to look at things like zoning and upzone certain areas of their city to allow for higher density buildings that will help ease some of the pressure on rent increases.
Mm. So let's take a city like Charlotte, North Carolina, where I lived for 5 years, so I know something about that. So you're talking about playing to your strengths. So a city like Charlotte would say, well, we have the NASCAR Hall of Fame. We have NASCAR races nearby. It's a big sport. We have long falls and long springs and then short winters and short hot summers. The hot part of the summer is fairly short. We don't have a major university. We don't have the, you know, and we're not like the Triangle area, Chapel Hill and all that, where they've got Duke and University of North Carolina and NC State and so on. So, this is an example, but they've got great weather, and they've got NASCAR, and they've got a banking center. That's a banking center of behind New York. It's the biggest banking center in the country. So I'll just kind of throw that in your lap. And is this kind of what you're talking about? What else might you add to that, or might you factor into the thinking?
Yeah, well, I think weather is certainly an undervalued asset. You know, if you look over kind of the past, the second half of the 20th century, a lot of the differences in population growth by states can be explained by the average January temperature. So warmer states saw huge population gains. You know, I've visited Charlotte a couple times. It's clear that there's something going on there. And again, I think if you're a city like that, you should try to capitalize on your ability to do things like, host outdoor festivals if the weather is always great. Kind of think about what fun quality of life consumer activities you can put on that will make people want to stay there.
And I agree. I echo that completely. Having an attractive quality of life is certainly one of the main draws for many people. And because of Charlotte's pretty warm weather, relatively warm weather, it does have many options in that area. You mentioned the banking sector before, which is also pretty prominent in Charlotte. The only thing I would caution the leaders of Charlotte, if I was advising them, is to make sure that they don't get so carried away with the banking sector that they neglect perhaps beefing up other job sectors as well. Because if the banking sector were to take a hit at some point in the future, then Charlotte would suffer a severe negative impact. Mm. So it's good that the sector is strong right now, but you just don't want to focus completely on it to the expense of other sectors as well.
You know, I'd also add that they have major league sports here. They've got the Carolina Panthers, a professional football team. They've got the Charlotte Hornets, professional basketball. And then they've also got, I think it's the Charlotte Knights, their minor league baseball team. So how important is sports to, that's part of the culture of any city is professional sports. Nashville's not a huge sports center. It does have the Titans, though, the Tennessee Titans, which are having a good season and so on. What about that aspect? And Mac, you were about to make a point, so why don't you go ahead and make that point, and then we can talk sports.
Sure. Yeah, I was just going to echo what Debo said, and especially when you're thinking about, generally, I would and economists would caution against a city kind of investing too heavily or picking winners in terms of industries that they want to see flourish in their city. And, you know, if you look at something like the banking sector, it's kind of ripe for innovation in terms of, increasing the use of technology and doing things like servicing loans. But also, if you think about, you know, the rise in work from home and telecommuting, you know, there is the chance that a lot of these jobs in the banking sector could go remote in the near future. So again, something to be cautioning about. But to your point on sports teams, you know, that's something that obviously people feel passionately about, that gives a sense of place. You know, when you think about kind of civic pride, a lot of that can be tied to sports. But I'd also say that, you know, there's not a whole lot of evidence that sports stadiums and sporting events generate so much economic activity that cities should kind of incentivize teams to come there. So, I you know, there've been some economics papers written about kind of the dangers of public subsidies for sports stadiums, and that, you know, if things are going right, then teams should want to locate in that city. They should want to attract that fan base. So instead of, you know, paying for a stadium to be built, a city should, you know, invest in good public infrastructure, invest in good provision of basic services, make a city feel safe. That will attract people, and the stadiums are going to be built where people want to live.
Yeah. And, you know, what you're making a good point there, because obviously cities got taken advantage of in a big way by professional sports franchises for years before they finally started saying, you know, you're in a big business, get some investors together and build your own stadium. Don't look at the taxpayers. And cities have finally kind of banded together in that way. But the other thing is that spectator sports is on the wane. Fewer people, especially young people, they're not so interested in sitting and watching as they are in participating, whether that's electronically, through making, you know, calls of their own. Playing fantasy football is huge, these fantasy sports leagues, because people get to participate. So there is, I've noticed that as well, that there's some very hot cities that really don't have professional sports. That's not really what it's all about. You know, it can be an advantage, obviously, and Charlotte has the benefit of NASCAR, which is naturally, organically grown up around it, and so on, and these other professional sports teams, which are very well supported in Charlotte, especially the football team, I think. So, what are we missing here? What else? What would you add in terms of other cities trying to tear a page out of the Nashville playbook to stick a little bit with a sports theme there?
Well, I would just echo Mac's comments regarding taking advantage of whatever comparative advantage that they have. We talked about Charlotte, and Charlotte has terrific weather, but not every city is going to have terrific weather. So if you're in a cold weather area, then you should do your best to take advantage of whatever opportunities you have to develop those strengths that are native to you. So for example, Denver, obviously skiing, Boise, Idaho skiing, Provo, Utah skiing, snowboarding, other cold weather activities that people enjoy and will serve as a draw for people. They should take advantage of those opportunities. And then clearly good governance is very important. We touched on this earlier, where Alex Brown is located and Hopkins is located in Baltimore. We've had a number of mayors over the past decade or so, because some of them have resigned due to scandals that they've been involved in. And that kind of instability is not helpful to the growth or development of a city. So governance matters, stability within government, having the optimal jurisdictional size, which Matt talked about earlier, being able to efficiently deliver services to your residents and your citizens is also very important. Staying out of trouble, staying scandal-free so the government doesn't get distracted and can continue to perform its functions. And then doing whatever government leaders and public officials can do to draw businesses and people to the region is helpful as well. And in that regard, offering an attractive quality of life with respect to all these different consumption activities that we talked about. And also environmental factors as well, reducing pollution, adding green spaces, things of that nature. can also help attract people, and cities can control that. There are some things they can't control. They can't control the weather. They can't control how many universities they may have within the city or within the region. But with respect to governance and developing consumption activities for people to have, they can control those things. And I think they should focus a city that's looking to grow in terms of population and economic and job growth, to try to focus on those things and also try to diversify its job sector. Its job sectors, if they're heavily concentrated in one area, because that is one thing that we found, that cities that have grown over the past decade or so tend to be diverse with respect to the different industries that are in them.
Our guests have been Debo Ayeni. He's director of research at Alex Brown Realty, and Mac McComas. He's with Johns Hopkins University. What is your title, Mac? I actually don't have your title here.
Yeah, so I'm the senior program manager at the university's 21st Century Cities Initiative.
21st Century Cities, that's the 21cc I saw. Okay, so 21st Century Cities, well on our way to the 20, we're in the 21st century. Let's live up to the century's billing. Gentlemen, this has been interesting. It's a great research project to take a look at a city like that. Well, you looked at a bunch of different cities, but then saw that Nashville scored particularly well, and the opportunity to understand why, and then maybe give some guidance to other cities through those results. Interesting project and of value. So thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate the time, and it was fun doing this, and I hope your audience learned a few things and enjoyed it as well.
Thank you very much, Mike.
And I'll just repeat one more time that what Debo said, that Alex Brown Realty, if you go to the website abrealty.com, you can get copies of the reports that they have written. So have at it, and we will meet all of you in Nashville.
This podcast has been sponsored by Juniper Square. Juniper Square is transforming the private capital markets industry with solutions and services that streamline fundraising, investment operations, and investor reporting. Designed for commercial real estate, Juniper Square is trusted by hundreds of investment sponsors to manage more than $1 trillion in real estate investments. Reach Juniper Square at junipersquare.com.